Welcome, everybody, to Inspiration in 10, where we share inspirational stories, articles, and Torah thoughts in memory of and le'ilui nishmat my father, Rav Gershom ben Arav ben Zion. And this week in South Surrey, Shabbat candlelighting is at 7:30 p.m. I'm always struck with emotion when I get yet another message of how connected we are as a Jewish people. My husband and I have been in some of the most remote locations of northern Alberta and BC, where we bumped into various Jews with different lifestyles from ours, but we have an instant connection and we've invited them for Shabbat. When we lived in Texas, we received a call from some truckers with an 18-wheeler and they needed a place for Shabbat. When my friend overheard that we had invited them to stay, she wondered, "Do you know these people?" "No," I said, "but they're family and they need a place for Shabbat." No matter where you look, there are beautiful examples of how the Jewish community reaches out with generosity for their brethren as well as for others the world over. These days, as Pesach approaches, if one was to stand in the streets of Jerusalem, or for that matter, many other Jewish cities, it would be difficult not to get emotional. The amount of Pesach food that is distributed to those in need is so enormous, it would be difficult to assess. In each neighborhood, truckloads of matzah, grape juice, wine, chicken, fish, vegetables are distributed with a smile. Nobody goes without the needs for the holiday unless he or she chooses so. And how many messages do we get daily to pray for people who are in need for a speedy recovery or for their other salvations? I get updates on my phone literally by the minute about how our brothers and sisters in Israel, whom I never met, how they're doing. And I think we all carry a prayer in our heart, at least in our heart or even on our lips, for their safety. I could go on all night with touching stories of pride and how connected we are, and even how we personally have been recipients of unbelievable love of fellow Jews. And yet this week, our Torah portion of Tazria addresses the leper who is physically struck with a form of leprosy, which is a spiritual nature. And the Torah gives details of how the leper gets assessed by a Kohen, how he has to leave the Jewish camp to be alone in an outside location, and as a prescription for atonement and part of his sacrifice, he's to bring a combination of cedar wood, a hyssop, crimson wool. That's an interesting and unusual combo. My pharmacist doesn't have that sort of prescription. What could it mean? We'll try to get back to that. Tzoraat, spiritual leprosy, comes as a result of gossip, or more accurately, lashon hara. Instead of praising one's Jewish friend, neighbor, sister, brother, rabbi, community, you fill in the blanks, for those beautiful things that he or she does, some of which we just mentioned, a man or a woman chose to use his or her tongue to spread divisiveness and gossip and was struck with leprosy. When the Torah gives the prescription for atonement, God uses the title for man, Adam. The commentaries explain in a number of places in the Torah that Adam is the highest choice of title for a man, as compared to, for example, the word Ish or Gever or Enosh, for example. It's quite startling that in a case where a man is choosing to speak evil or disrespectful, lashon hara, or gossip about his fellow man, the Torah would then choose the highest form of the word, Adam, man. To answer this enigma, I'd like to share some details of the well-known Bayless trial, which took place between September and October 28th of 1913. In the beginning of the 20th century, when supposedly the page had turned in the history book of archaic accusations of blood libels and the like against Jews, a 13-year-old non-Jewish child was found dead near the Zaitsev factory. It was a brick factory, in which Mendel Bayliss, a non-religious Jew, was the superintendent. An anti-Semitic blood libel began to mushroom, accusing Mendel and Jews of murdering a Christian child in order to use his blood for Passover matzah. Mendel was jailed for nearly 2 years and demanded that a fair trial would take place. After all, it was the 20th century. The news of this catastrophe and absolutely archaic anti-Semitism against a Jew spread worldwide. Jews united, and this was, don't forget, pre-internet, in prayer for Mendel, and many contributed towards legal and other fees to fight this unjust. The accusation and the treatment of this Jew was totally unfair, and they wanted it fought in the courts in a real fair trial. The best lawyer in Russia was hired. He happened to be a friend of the chief rabbi of Moscow, Rabbi Yaakov Mazeh. Rabbi Yaakov received supportive letters from all over the world, including from Rabbi Meir Shapiro, who we know later became the chief rabbi of Lublin. He sent him some interesting Torah thoughts. Rabbi Mazeh didn't actually see the connection to the trial at that time, but we'll hear later why this was important. During the 2 years leading up to the trial, the stories snowballed and grew horns and tails as to the gory things that Mendel had done to this Christian child, Andrei Yakutchinsky, and how Jews are perpetrating similar acts, all to produce their matzah. When Mendel's defense team had their moment in court, they explained quite clearly how ridiculous the charges were. Jews are not allowed to eat or drink any blood, Jewish or non-Jewish. In fact, if a Jew cuts his own gums when biting into an apple, for example, and he emits blood of his own into the apple, he spits out the apple and will rinse his mouth so as not to swallow his own blood. How preposterous would it be then to think that Jews would want or need blood to be part of the special holy matzahs for Pesach? The opposing counsel then got up and, claiming to know much about Judaism, said to the judge, "The defense makes a good point about not using human blood, but the root of the problem is that Jews do not consider other people, non-Jewish, to be real people, and therefore laws against blood would not apply." The prosecutor then went on to bring his supposed proof by saying that in the Talmud it says that when Torah uses the word Adam, man, it refers to Jews only, as the rest of human beings are not Adam, man. And therefore, a Jew would not hesitate to use Christian blood for his matzah. Now, of course, notwithstanding that we wouldn't even use animal blood for anything, not even blood from a bug is kosher, and that's why salting is an important process of the koshering, the whole koshering process, and matzah is anyway only made out of flour and water. But the inflammatory accusation of the prosecutor had to be addressed. The defense lawyer got up and requested that this huge accusation needed someone knowledgeable of the Jewish Talmud, and he would ask the chief rabbi Mazeh to respond to the accusation. Rabbi Mazeh quickly and brilliantly responded. He asked the prosecutor if he's familiar with the Tanakh. The prosecutor and many of the Christians were. The rabbi brought proof from many other passages in the Bible and the prophets and the scriptures where the term man includes all of mankind, not just Jews. In those instances, the word ish or gever is used for man. Are you familiar with how one expresses the plural for man in our language, he asked? If you use the word ish, for example, it would be converted to anashim in plural. If you use the word gever, for example, it would be converted to gvarim for plural. What if you use the word adam for man? How would you express that in plural form? There's no answer for that, said Rab Maza, because adam only has a singular form. So yes, non-Jews are of course referred to as people in the Torah many times, but not with the word adam. Why not? Because using the title adam for a Jew has an underlying message. When the Talmud teaches atem kruyim adam ve'en umat ha'olam nekrayim adam, that you, my Jewish people, are referred to by the lofty name Adam, whereas others are not, God is reminding us that we as a people are like one body with one heart. We have a deep connection to each other, no matter what the distance, and even if we've never met. The term Adam reminds us that we are not a combination of people, plural. We are one, and in fact, this Mendel Bayless affair, he said, in the trial, is a perfect proof. He asked the judge and the jury to assess in their minds if there would be such a tumult around the world if one Russian or Ukrainian was on trial. Would the whole world be praying and donating and performing good deeds in order for that one Ukrainian to succeed and be released? And yet, when one Jew has been falsely accused, we Jews feel that we've all been accused. I have been receiving letters of support from all over the world, and donations have been made for Mendel's trial, also from all over the world. This brilliant explanation was the key point that refuted the prosecutor's case, and eventually Mendel was released, and it was realized that it had all been a false anti-Semitic accusation. But to answer our original question, why at a time when a Jew, as in this week's portion, committed the grave act of Lashon Hara, slandering, gossiping against his fellow, why is he referred to as Adam, the loftiest term for man? Why does he have to go outside the camp to be alone? Why the hyssop and the cedar and the crimson wool? And a number of other questions beg to be asked. In abbreviated form, let's try to wrap it all up. The man or woman who is conceited enough to speak evil of his fellow Jew is forgetting how integrally he and that Jew are connected. You and he or she are one Adam. You are the only people referred to as Adam. And you have therefore a responsibility to act as one unit, not to try to cause divisiveness in what is really one unit. The cedar is the tallest of trees. The hyssop is the lowest one. Crimson wool in Hebrew is called tolat shani, the same Hebrew word that's used for the lowly worm. We're reminded with the prescription for the leper not to be conceited as the cedar, to draw on our humility. In addition, to take a lesson from the towering cedar that we have unlimited potential, to look at the whole Adam, to realize that in addition to being intricately bound up together with our friends, our neighbors, our relatives, we have to look at each other, at each person, together with the entire package, the whole Adam that is part of him and that he comes with. The entire package, which, by the way, includes God, Adam, just quickly, Adam is Aleph Dam, Aleph being the God, the one, the Elohim, and the Dam being the human side of him, the blood. This one Adam is comprised of all of his character traits, his challenges, his heartaches, the load he bears, and his blessings. And if that is not enough to stop us from speaking Lashon Hara, and one still gets tzora'at, leprosy, the word, by the way, which actually has a connotation of a begrudging eye, a tzara'at ayin, for those who speak Hebrew, then one is sent out of the Jewish camp to be alone, to contemplate what it's like to be separated from those who are really a part of us, even if we or they are not perfect. I could give beautiful examples of times when people have been misjudged and really have acted as part of the one Adam, that is the Jewish people. Regretfully, I'll have to leave that for tonight because I think I've already exceeded my time limit. I'll just add that in the case of extreme leprosy, which affected even the walls of the house, the walls had to be dismantled in the process. When the Jews followed this procedure, they would find hidden treasures in the walls that were hidden, had been hidden by previous owners who were not around anymore. May we merit to be able to see the hidden treasures in all of those in our lives. May we have the strength to withhold judgment and to see the whole picture, the whole Adam, and to really feel the connection of one man, the lofty Adam. My friends, thank you for joining me in elevating the airwaves. Le'iloi Nishmat, my father, Rav Gershom Ben Arav Ben Zion. Please remember, a little light dispels a lot of darkness.